The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
People are still sharing their memories, good and bad, of lockdown one, because it's 5 years this week since Leo Varadkar announced that the country would be locking down. And if it's not too traumatic an experience for everybody, we're going to go back there again. The initial announcement was for 2 weeks, and the perceived wisdom was, you know, they'd add another week, it would get us to Easter, and then everything really would stay closed for about two or three more weeks, and then 5 or 6 weeks, we'd all go back to normal. The short, sharp lockdown, remember they talked about that? The short, sharp lockdown would flatten the curve. Didn't turn out that way. We were dealing with it for a couple of years. With me to discuss is Una Carr. Una is a long COVID patient. Robert Maguire is with me from Massey Brothers Funeral Home. They had to severely adapt to a new reality. And Linda Kelly, spokesperson for Better Maternity Care as well. You're all very welcome and thanks a million for joining us. Una, when did you get COVID?
I was one of what's now called the first waivers back in March 2020,
Kieran. Oh, wow.
So, and at that point, I had no idea what was happening. I went from being a really fit, healthy person, mum of two, very busy lifestyle, socialised, full-time job, to coming down with this virus. And I actually had a positive test, and that was about March the 30th. And to be honest, never really recovered. So yeah, we're talking half a decade now, the 5 years, when you think about it. And the initial infection would have been classified as mild because I wasn't hospitalised. But I think that was the context of then, because the ICUs were completely overrun and, you know, you really had to be almost at death's door.
They thought they were going to be overwhelmed.
That's it, indeed. Yeah. So I was out of work for 10 weeks, which was a huge chunk of work. And when I returned to work, I wasn't really recovered, to be honest with you. So I had a lot of chest pain and, you know, huge fatigue, crippling fatigue. And then I subsequently diagnosed with a myocarditis and pericarditis of the heart. And I had lung function tests that showed that I wasn't, you know, the gas transfer, the oxygen transfer around my body wasn't adequate. And while I've recovered from the heart issue, I'm still on long-term medication, probably for the rest of my life. And the lung function hasn't improved in that one value, if you like.
So how does it manifest day to day at the moment?
Well, I mean, I'm here in front of you, and but honestly, I have about 4 good hours in a day, like good, and that's on a good day, yeah, with the medication. So I'm it's huge fatigue. It's a lot of sort of neurological symptoms as well. So looking at a screen for too long, or, you know, driving at night, traffic lights will bother me. So that kind of thing, that's just a touch of what happens. Other kind of issues would have been forgetfulness and just really finding it difficult to concentrate too long.
Yeah. How nervous were you when you got that positive test? Because I remember when I got COVID was well after that. And I was at the point where, was it the alpha, one of these waves everybody was getting it. And I'll be honest with you, we weren't really bothered. There was a sense of, we're all going to get it now. And vaccines are coming anyway. Yeah. And we'll just stay at home for a few days. And everyone in the house, we nearly wanted when someone got in the house, you nearly wanted everyone to get it. Let's just get this over and done with.
I know, there was that.
But at the start, there was a real fear.
There was,
I remember people talking about kind of, you know, whole age cohorts in society were going to be in severe, severe danger.
For sure.
How did you feel when you got it?
I was, to be honest, I had never been as sick before in my life. So I was very concerned that I wasn't getting better, Kieran. And I think that was the biggest issue for me, that nothing was working, antibiotics and, you know, rest and all of the things that I was meant to be doing, nothing was working. And I was previously so healthy. So there was a narrative out there that said, you know, you needed to have a predisposed to some illness, like obesity or, you know, heart condition, to kind of fall into the category of long COVID, actually. But I had nothing. I wasn't even medicated for anything, and fit and healthy. So, it was a shock to me. And then, you know, all I wanted was to get better for my family, for me to get back to work. And that just hasn't happened. You know, I attend a long COVID clinic and I got excellent care. But without the research, without the various well, I suppose it needs funding. We don't really have answers yet. I mean, I'm functioning to some extent, but there are so many that aren't at all, so many that can't attend clinics. Services are very, very poor, unfortunately, and children, long COVID affects children too, and there are no services in Ireland. Yeah. So it's
well, wonders whether
anyway.
We've all turned a bit of a blind eye to it because yes. we wanted to move on.
I know.
We just want to
move
on. Stop talking about it.
I really believe me.
Yeah.
I want and I know the community that I'm part of. You know, I've met a lot of good people through the ME and chronic fatigue and long COVID community. None of us want to be here. None of us are pretending. None of, you know, the things that are kind of the accusations that are thrown out there they're cruel and they're not valid.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all just want to get better and we're all looking for ways to do that, you know.
So, Robert, at Massey Brothers as well, like I say, you had to adopt and completely adapt the business model, as it were. How quickly did that happen? So we played a little clip earlier in the show of Leo Varadkar in Washington, D.C., you know, that this is, we're all going to kind of stay home for the next few weeks. I guess you immediately had to make a plan then.
It happened straight away. Like, I remember I'm one of four of my family members in the business, and we managed the business together. And we were talking quite late into that night, and it was my job to kind of come up with the protocol, because we weren't given protocols necessarily to follow as funeral directors. It was just there was a blanket protocol sent out and we had to try and adapt that into our business. So again, at the core of being a funeral director is caring for people, and it was very hard to do that without being physical with people, you know, without, like, for the first few weeks of COVID coming in, we had to do Zoom meetings with families. We weren't even allowed to see them. So to try and portray a sense of care and compassion over a Zoom call, it's just quite a difficult thing to do. So it was really tough, but we've got great people. They all knew the job they had to do, and at the same time they knew they'd families at home that they had to protect as well. So they were happy to just follow.
Yeah. The one feature of how we do death in this country are the big crowds at funerals.
Yeah.
You know, people go to funerals of people they haven't seen in donkey's years, people they've never met, but they're kind of friends of the family by extension. So they go along, and it's easy to laugh at it. It's lovely. I think it's lovely anyway. And
Irish people are known for doing funerals very, very well.
And all that had to stop. You couldn't have the big crowds. I mean, there must have been a huge adjustment.
Well,
it must have been strange.
For us as well, but the adjustment was for the families we were looking after. Like, again, community is a massive part of every funeral, from the storytelling to the communities helping out with the sandwiches, the teas and coffees, you know, the dinners and stuff like that. But then also just the storytelling. And storytelling is a massive part of the funeral process. And you didn't have any of that. You didn't have Johnny down the road telling you about Paddy when he was a kid in school, you know, or the funny stories that happened here or there. You know, it was just very different. So families had to look to each other to try and create that sense at that time, you know. And
you must have seen people very lonely.
Yeah, and it was a really lonely time. It was. And like, look, families are families, you know, not all families get along. And we at the time nearly became part of the family in that process, because we were just nearly an extra person in the room, you know, so you were part of it, you know. And that was very special to us, you know. We were like, we're really honoured to be in that space with people, you know.
Did it change long-term anything for the business? Or once restrictions were lifted, you know, two or three lockdowns later and things got back to normal for you, did funerals go back to the way they were?
They did, yeah, in a way. But, like, the online presence of funerals really, that stayed around. And, like, people didn't necessarily have to travel, and you had the onlines in the churches and the chapels where people were able to come in and see and be a part of it. And so that stayed around. I think the sense of community has stayed around, you know. So there was very little people could do during COVID other than maybe stand outside their house and pay respect as the hearse drove by and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I do feel that sense of community is still very much so alive in Dublin at the moment.
And Una, how frustrating do you find it then when you hear people say, listen, I've probably been guilty of saying it myself a few times, God, isn't it great that that's all done and dusted, that we're finished with it?
Well, I suppose my life kind of since diagnosis has been about trying to get better and finding ways. And that's, I met so many people in the same position as me and in much worse situations as well. And so it's very live for us because we don't have answers. And, you know, that's the piece that probably frustrates me most, that people don't really understand the severity. I mean, again, I suppose it's an invisible illness, so it's very difficult to, by looking at me, you may not know I'm ill or I have all of those issues, but it's just the lack of, I don't know, intellectual curiosity to understand what's going on. And it's not a popular topic. I suppose there's no political gain in it either. So we just have to keep advocating as a group, you know, to because it will grow, unfortunately. That is what's going to happen, you know.
Hi, Kieran. I'm a COVID survivor, says one listener. Hospitalised and placed into a coma in early April 2020. I woke up in mid-June that year, paralysed. My whole life changed forever. 5 years on, still trying to put my life back together after this terrible time. Mm-hmm. What I've learned from my experience is how vulnerable we are as people and what could lurk around the corner.
Yeah.
What thing that you cannot do anymore, Una, do you miss most doing?
Oh, well, I mean, my career, I can't work anymore. But I really like keeping fit and active with my family. So like on holidays, my husband and I and our two teenage girls, and we would, you know, we'd hike or we'd go swimming, or and I can't do that now. So it's, you know, I'm left behind in that sense. And I really miss that. And even just socializing, you know, I have to really pick and choose what I'm able for. So my life's just got smaller as a result, you know, and that's the hardest bit, I think.
Yeah.
I'd really love to see just more help for people that haven't access to a clinic like I do, you know.
Linda Kelly is on the line as well. Linda's a spokesperson for Better Maternity Care. Linda, a point I made, and you would have heard it there to Una, is how often we might remark that, you know, that's all done and dusted. Thank God it's in the past. Is it completely in the past when it comes to maternity care?
I think for any of the women who gave birth during that time, every time your kid's birthday rolls around, memories flood back in. And in practical sense, not all of the hospitals lifted all of the restrictions. So there was a moment, and you'll know this because we spoke a lot during the campaign, Kieran, there was a moment whereby there was a very clear instruction that partners were to be allowed back in to the hospital, you know, for visiting hours as whatever that hospital had pre-COVID. And that happened. But I still every so often get a message on social media from people to say, you know, my hospital has told me my partner can't come to this appointment, or, you know, that my other children can't come in and visit me when the baby is born. And is this still actually going on? And I think they're just like, there has been some hospitals, not all hospitals, but I think some hospitals have just taken advantage to keep some of those restrictions in place. But I think for the majority,
the majority though have gone back.
I think it's the memory of what they kind of what they went through, you know. And for some people, it wasn't always a negative experience. For some people, it was a much more streamlined experience. You know, they were able to go into the hospital. The hospital was a lot quieter. They came out and, you know, they managed it well. And for lots of other people, myself included, it was really traumatic to have, you know, to have your husband essentially kicked out after you'd given birth. My second child was born by C-section in July of 2020. And then you're just left on your own for 3 or 4 days in the hospital with absolutely no support. And we all know maternity services anyway are short staffed in Ireland. And it just, even thinking about it today in preparation for the interview, you know, it was such a strange time. But that there was no consideration given early doors to maternity services when we know that, when we knew that every day women were going to have to give birth, regardless of what COVID was doing. And I think it just goes to the real lack of balance that we have in decision making in this country, where we don't have enough women in politics. We don't have enough women in senior decision making within the HSC.
Linda, we talked about this an awful lot at the time as part of that campaign. And it was remarkable. Some policymakers, I don't think, realised that this was going on. And you mentioned, you know, women giving birth. The stories that kind of always stuck with me are people who got in touch with the show during this, and they had stories about maybe miscarriage and kind of sitting This is like, I'm not trying to be gruesome or anything to people here, maybe having their dinner, but this is the reality of it. Kind of being put sitting on towels in a waiting room and told their partner had to wait outside in the car park and couldn't sit beside them when it was quite obvious they were losing their baby. I actually think policymakers didn't realise.
But even worse than that, Kieran, in the very early days of COVID, women were denied anesthesiology for procedures that they had to have done, because the there was a perceived risk or a risk around the airborne. And, you know, I don't understand the full science around it, but there was a risk in relation to the provision of pain relief. And there were some women who had to go through pregnancy loss associated procedures without anaesthetic. Yeah. And there were some women in the early lockdowns who had to give birth via C-section with nobody with them. Like, there were really incredible, difficult stories right throughout that whole period. And there was not until we had a protest of hundreds of pregnant of women outside Dáil Éireann in relation to this, was there political will to actually bring this to an end. And I think, to be honest, had we not mobilised and had those women not come together in what was a life-changing campaign for me in terms of just the community that came together at that particular time, I believe firmly that those restrictions would still be in place in hospitals. Because there was no political will from senior decision making within the HSC or in the political system to change anything.
Well, it's a conversation we had earlier around lockdown one, and kind of people were sharing pretty happy memories about the good weather and being off work and still getting paid for it and being able to pay off credit card debts and everything. But I think it's been important to have this conversation as well about the more morbid reality for people, about how businesses had to adapt and did so successfully, and about how it's still very much a live issue for others. So listen, thank you all very much to Linda Kelly from Bed and Maternity Care, Robert Maguire from Massey Brothers Funeral Homes, and to Una Carr, a long COVID patient. Thank you all very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.